today on Ag News Daily.
Right now, we are one of the leaders in having that opportunity to convert it into a flatbed or have multiple uses for it. Another thing is like the ability to have a PTO on the front of our machines and having different attachments so that it's versatile, so you can do more with less.
Well, welcome back to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily Show. We're excited to have you back here. We're back in studio, although our interviews are still going to be great information that we've got coming from a couple of farm shows this fall. I just got back from Husker Harvest Days.
Yes. How was it? That's one I've never been to.
Well, it was the very first mission trip I've ever been on. We went over there to, as Iowa corn growers, to let them know exactly the best ways to go about growing their corn.
How'd that go over for them?
I think they're a little smarter.
Okay. How was weather while you were there this week?
It was beautiful. Windy, which kept things nice. We did have warm and dry conditions that were also expected to be across the rest of the Corn Belt. That will continue into next week. The Midwest is experiencing above average temperatures, including putting some stress in dry areas for immature corn and soybeans. Rainfall is forecasted to be limited. Rather than spotty, a cold front could provide better chances for showers by the middle of next week, going into the middle of September. There's hope that if Hurricane Francine moves into the southern and eastern portions of the region, it would help bring some needed moisture to the winter wheat planting later this fall, in addition to improving some of the water levels in the Mississippi River that we've talked about. The hurricane made landfall on Wednesday with a significant risk of flooding in the Louisiana area. Since New Orleans is very important for river logistics and agriculture, the North American fertilizer market is keeping a very close eye on this, and that's we will see what's happening. Josh Linville is telling reporters to keep an eye on that. Hurricane Francine is expected to help dial back the risk of low water levels for a few weeks, especially in that Mississippi River area, especially at Memphis, where water level is minus 7 feet below the zero gauge. Therefore, barge drafts have been cut, and each foot of draft that is reduced means a barge's cargo is cut by 200 tons. So shipping less for the same amount of freight is going to be costing shippers more. So some updates there, Delaney, on the weather. It's good to see, hopefully, with no issues or damage, maybe some moisture returning to some of these areas.
Well, we're certainly going to talk shipping logistics here in just a moment. But before we do, let's talk crop conditions, because this week we saw the first official harvest report come out with now 5% of the nation's corn crop officially harvested. 64% of that crop is still rated good to excellent across all 18 corn-growing states. And according to the report, that's down slightly from the week prior. 65% of the soybean crop is also rated good to excellent. We don't have official harvest numbers there yet, Tanner, but was talking to my husband. I think maybe we're going to be starting next weekend, so we'll see some combines roll probably here very soon. As we look at spring wheat conditions, 85% of that crop is harvested, up 2% from this time last year and ahead of the 5-year average. So starting to see combines roll. When do you think your family's going to roll?
High moisture corn has already started. We put a poll out going to Husker Harvest Days. Last year, we saw 27 active combines in the field. This year, we saw one on the way out.
Wow.
So a little bit of difference there, especially due to the rain that they got. Mm-hmm. We did see a couple of updates this week. One came on the Farm Bill. Congress returned from its summer recess this week and were welcomed back by many agricultural groups. Leaders and organizations representing corn, wheat, sorghum, and peanuts, along with many other commodities, visited the lawmakers in Washington, D.C. They are urging a swift passage of that 2020 Farm Bill this week in the middle of September. Additionally, more than 300 agricultural organizations sent letters to congressional leadership pointing out the challenges that farmers are experiencing. This letter expresses the support for advancing that Farm Bill in 2024 that will address the worsening conditions in the farming country. Noting that the farm economy has taken a downward spiral, the letter says that it is critical for Congress to pass this new Farm Bill that will strengthen the safety nets that many producers are going to be facing, multiple years of not being profitable, causing their overall financial situation to deteriorate. I know this has been a focus on a lot of these ag groups, especially out at Husker, seeing some of the conversations that were happening around. But additional information was provided in the letter saying that the USDA forecasts that farm sector debt will reach $540.8 billion in 2024, and that's the highest for the inflation level adjusted measurements since 1970. A one-year extension of the 2018 Farm Bill expires at the end of the month in September, although most programs would not be affected until January of 2025. Still, this is important. The House and the Senate have yet to act on the Farm Bill, though the House version was approved by its Agricultural Committee in late May. According to the Congressional Budget Office, the bill was $33 billion over budget, mostly due to the increased spending on commodity supports. But proposals were made in the Senate committee, and a vote has yet to happen there. So we'll continue to watch the progress on this story, Delaney.
Maybe lack of progress as well, unfortunately.
It's been a very slow moving bill.
Well, as we think about maybe other factors affecting logistics, rest assured that a potential strike on the East Coast shouldn't have too large of an impact on U.S. ag exports. A contract between the International Longshoremen's Association, or ILA, that's a mouthful, and the United States Maritime Alliance, otherwise known as USMX, is up for renewal of their current six-year contract covering approximately 25,000 dock and port workers employed in container and roll-on or roll-off operations. That's talking automobiles, tractors, and other mobile machinery at ports along the U.S. East Coast, Gulf Coast, and Great Lakes. The main area of dispute and negotiations relates to wages, of course, and the use of automation, healthcare, and container royalties. Executive Director of the Soy Transportation Coalition, Mike Steenhook, says it shouldn't make a huge impact on bulk exports of soybeans and grain exports coming from the East Coast or the Gulf. However, there could be an impact to containerized exports of soybeans and other agricultural products, including increased shipping costs. Might impact our ability also to be competitive with some of those other marketplaces we see in the world. This strike deadline is looming and has a September 30th deadline before it will go into effect. And during the ILA's wage committee meeting in Teaneck, New Jersey earlier this month, the contract proposal and the organization's strike mobilization plan were talked about with no further negotiations as of that September 5th meeting. That same day in September earlier this month, according to the USMX press release, they said they were committed to resume negotiations with the ILA on a new master contract before the current agreement expires in September to avoid that labor strike. ILA reacted via Facebook that they've gotten some attention, noting that inflation has eaten into their raises and wages, and so they're kind of pointing the finger to some of those as far as why they haven't maybe been able to keep up with the market environment pace there.
I love how they used Facebook.
Go to where the people are, I guess.
That's exactly right. I also learned out of Husker about a roll-on, roll-off shipping organization to where that's how some implements get shipped.
We should have had you report on that story,
I guess. You roll on, somebody else has to roll it off. But we've got other news. Overall, tractor sales are down 19.4% compared to last year, according to the August 2024 U.S. Ag Tractor and Combine Sales Report from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. The report says that the segments of two-wheel drive tractors experienced a drop in sales similar to what was seen last month. Additionally, year-to-date tractor sales were down 13%, as were the harvest season. According to the association's graph, October and April are the months where more tractors were purchased than usual. The senior vice president of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers told Successful Farming that the decline in the overall tractor market highlights the urgent need for that robust farm bill to move through the legislative sessions. So not only going to be affecting farmers itself, but also those that supply farmers, Delaney.
Certainly seems like we've got a lot of headlines that are connecting the dots today. Taking a look at some USDA news, the USDA has invested nearly $121 million in specialty crop research and specifically organic agricultural production. That $121 million investment will go to advanced research and extension activities aiming to help support specialty crop and organic agricultural producers. Fruits, vegetables, tree nuts, dried fruits, and horticulture and nursery crops, in addition to floriculture, are all defined as specialty crops according to the latest Farm Bill. The USDA chief scientist and undersecretary for research, education, and economics, Dr. Jacobs Young, says that those crops play a vital role in preserving not only the agricultural economy, but also the cultural heritage and enhancing economic opportunities across local, regional, and global food systems. In total, 17 research projects will be funded, including developing sustainable solutions for labor, efficiency automations, and production in the nursery industry at North Carolina State University. Another project at Washington State University will develop mitigation strategies for current cultivars and knowledge to quickly assess new cultivars sustainably for future climate conditions for pear and apple crops. The funding was awarded through USDA's Specialty Crop Block and multi-state grant programs, altogether being part of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture Specialty Crop Research Initiatives, otherwise known as NIFA. These programs will hope to expand competitiveness of the specialty crop industry and increase access to crops for our consumers. Now, in addition to those 17 projects being funded on the research side, 23 organic projects in total will be funded. About $50.5 million in total will go to those organic projects funded by NIFA's Organic Agriculture Program. That will include some organic agriculture research and extension initiatives through the Organic Transition Program. So, you know, when you think about specialty crops, you know, those are high-value crops. There's a lot of dollars going into those acres. So it's exciting for some of those producers to see some new market access, hopefully, here coming out of some of that research.
There is. And I'm so glad you had that story, because there was a lot of big words that I don't think I would.
Acronyms.
What is floriculture? Is that flowers?
Yeah, flowers.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I read that and went, huh, I wonder if that is flowers. But we're going to stay kind of on the same type of cycle here. Farm net income drops. It's down nearly 23% since 2022. The USDA September 24 farm sector income forecast is expected to fall, but at a slower rate than what it fell in 2023. Net farm income is a broad measure of profits, the USDA says. It decreased in 2022 by 19.5%, all the way down in 2023 to $146 billion total. When you look at 23 compared to 24, the net farm income is expected to decrease 4.4%. by $6.5 billion down to $140 billion. That's higher than the numbers released in the USDA's February projection. That's adjusting the original estimate from $116 billion to $140 billion. That's an upward revision that places net farm income above the 20-year average mark, with this smaller-than-expected decline. Although the broader economic pressures persist, it may understate the challenges especially crop farmers are facing during this growing year in 2024. Since 2022, cash receipts from crop and livestock sales are down 4%. Federal support is 33% down. And net farm income since 22, as we mentioned at the top of the story, is down 23%. When you look at 23 and 24 expectations, according to the USDA, Farm Bureau puts calculations in place of production expenses being up 6%. So not only is revenue down, but expenses are up. Cash receipts from crop sales are expected to decline more than what was expected from February's report, a year-to-year decline of 10%. That's nearly $27.7 billion in a loss of the $249 billion expectation. Corn receipts are forecasted to decline by 20%. And soybean receipts are also expected to decline by 14.6%. There's a little bit more optimism, Delaney, on the livestock side. The updated September reports have the animal product receipts projected to rise by 7.1%, approximately nearly $17.8 billion in 2024. That's due to the stronger than anticipated prices across cattle, dairy, and eggs. Ag receipts are likely reflecting the robust price gains linked to the impacts of higher pathogenic avian influenza. That surged by nearly 39%, despite the gains, not all areas of the livestock industry are benefiting. Turkey producers are expected to have a downturn, with receipts forecasted to drop nearly 42%. Every farm is different, so it is quite interesting to dive into these statistics and take a look at all of those pieces of data tied together.
Absolutely. But Tanner, as we segue into our interview for today, you mentioned we've been at a lot of farm shows lately. We're going to kick it over to a conversation we had at the Farm Progress Show with Kubota. So let's get to that interview.
chatting all things ATV and otherwise. Joined today by Kira Daniel, the product manager for RTV Accessories, and Andrew Pittard, the RTV product marketing specialist. Those are both mouthfuls. So let's turn it over to both of you to tell us what your each respective roles do with Kubota.
So as the product manager for RTV Accessories, I'm responsible for all things windshield, winches, everything that makes the RTV cool. So if you want to customize your vehicle, you can do that by adding all of the things. One key thing about our products is that we have versatility and the ability to add a PTO and different type of attachments and implements. So you can get blades, snow blowers, you name it, you can do it on a RTV.
And Andrew, what about you?
I do a lot of the ordering for the machines. I do a lot of the outfitting for the machines. I do a lot of the production on where the machines go to, especially shows like this. Like I said, I'm a little the handyman, I guess, of the rest of the group. So I do a little bit of everything. So
Swiss Army knife.
Yes, exactly.
Those are perfect people to have on the team.
Yes, yes.
What I think to note is that you have a master's of science in agriculture education, and this is a role where you work with a lot of neat partners. Tell me about your role and how you're using what you learned in master's of science in ag education.
Yeah, so every year, like from a training standpoint, we do training with our internal dealers. Anytime we release new products, we want to make sure our sales force is educated on those. So we have our own ranch, or we have property where we take machines out, we do competitive comparisons. We also make sure that our dealers and salespeople are equipped with the knowledge to go out and know the differences where we win and sometimes where we don't win, so that we can be our own best advocates. So being able to learn and train and do those things are transferable skills. And then also when we're at farm shows like this, we're teaching customers what's new, and so that's how kind of learn that information. Another thing with like education and in my role as in marketing, have to keep up with like materials and making sure our accessories brochure is up to date. Make sure the online website reflects the key information. So that is very important, to be thorough, be able to read through those things and make sure that they're accurate and kind of plan ahead. So,
you know, speaking of education and being at the Farm Progress Show, where you come to learn about some new technologies or opportunities. Michelle, you had the opportunity to learn or be behind the scenes, if you will, with Kubota earlier today.
And it was interesting. It was great. And to me, I like to just ride, and all the things to know behind the scenes is something I'm trying to learn more about, even my vehicle. But hydraulics was one mention, and that gives some special features. Tell me, explain that in layman's terms of what is that? How is it better?
So hydraulics is superior in the way of most companies, actually pretty much all companies use electronics. So electronic lifts, they use a lot more electronics to actually control everything that has to do with the actually engine components, everything that does with that. But what we do is we go a little more, we're a tractor company. We want to make things ultra reliable. So we know our users, we know what they use them for. And hydraulics is a superior system for not only for just commonality, but for durability. So you can get much more power out of a hydraulic system than you can out of just a traditional electronic system. That goes back to the transmission. We don't have any kind of belts in there, so it can't fail. So again, ultimate reliability. So that's another key advantage is, we have hydraulics in our transmission, but it also powers our hydraulic lifts for our beds. But also it powers our hydraulic power steering, which is superior than, say, an electronic power steering. So, again, it all comes back to hydraulics is a not an old-school way, but it is more of a reliable and more powerful way to control the unit.
Hey, Andrew, I have to correct you. We are a RTV company that makes tractors, so...
Oh. Sorry about that. Yes, we are.
So let's first get started with your RTVX. What is it? How does it help those people on the farm?
RTVX is really a unit that's been around for a long time. We have recently renamed it to the RTVX. And it's been a similar unit that we've had for a long time. And it's It has a traditional diesel engine, three-cylinder diesel engine, 24.8 horsepower. Has the VHT transmission, that's basically a tractor transmission. Ultra-reliable, both of those components. It's really a toolbox for the every man or every woman that's on their farm or the ranch. It's very commercial, so if you need that for a commercial, you can have that for that as well. It's almost overly built, which is very good. We are unique in the aspect of, like Kiara said, we're able to attach implements to it, and we're able to attach a lot of accessories to it. This particular RTVX, we have three different trims, the base, standard, and premium. On the premium trim, we have the availability of getting the exclusive ProConvert cargo box. So what that means is you're available to lower each side for easy entry. So putting anything that's in your bed, you can put that in there.
It's like flat. It was pretty cool.
Exactly, yes. Or you can make it even better by taking the bed sides off and making a true flat bed. So if you've got some a little more bulkier items, you can just convert it into a permanent flatbed if you want.
It's really interesting, I think, to note, too, that you guys have over 50 years at Kubota, and I'm sure there have been a lot of changes. Like some of the features you were just mentioning, right, have been driven out of the innovation, probably requests from growers or folks that are using your equipment day to day. As you think maybe back to both of your histories at the company and the last 5 to 10 years, what's some of the innovation that really gets the Kubota team up each day thinking about, hey, this is the next best thing for growers?
Yeah, I think that what we try to do is innovate. That's one of our core values. And so I know that technology such as telematics has been added to our portfolio so that you can track your units, know where they are, especially if you have a fleet of units. That's very helpful for people. And then also the ProConvert bed is something that is more innovative. Right now, we are one of the leaders in having that opportunity to convert into a flatbed or have multiple uses for it. Another thing is the ability to have a PTO on the front of our machines and having different attachments so that it's versatile, so you can do more with less.
I think that durability, that power, right, is what the Farm Progress Show is all about. You guys also unveiled a cool new partnership, if I will. Introducing a partnership with Ross Chastain, who's a NASCAR driver. For those of our viewers or listeners who might be aware of that, I'm not a NASCAR person, but when I saw that, I thought, hey, that's pretty neat. Kiara, I bet you had a big hand in that from the marketing perspective. Give us a little bit about why that partnership came to fruition.
Yeah, so one thing about Kubota and our partnerships, we want to make sure that our influencers per se are actually users of our equipment. So that is one of the key foundations, is we want them to be able to be real life customers that actually use our equipment. And Ross was a perfect fit since he is a current farmer, comes from an ag background, and raises watermelons. So we thought that was a great partnership, along with getting the name of Kubota out onto the NASCAR platform. So, it's like family when we have these partnerships of people that can speak true to our machines, and not just from a paid partnership standpoint, but actually live it and work it and really believe in the Kubota brand.
And I don't know if you guys know, when when Ross actually wins a race, he celebrates with watermelons. So,
yeah, you got to interview or talk to Ross and the watermelon farmer earlier, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and that was really cool. We were talking if I've ever been to a race, and I haven't, and I asked him, where should I go? What's been some of your top memories? And I mean, he's like, all the wins have been fun, which naturally that was cool. But we rode together, so I drove first and he drove, and he definitely knew how to operate a little better. So that was kind of cool.
We, watermelons, I didn't get to choose. They chose me. Racing was a hobby. So racing was something that my dad liked. They got me into it when I was 12 years old.
Wow. These bunks, this course?
Lots of bunks. I mean, for all the work, those are putting it through it.
So you haven't done this yet?
No, we're not.
Are these obstacles similar to what you have on the watermelon farm?
We're pretty flat, and we're very sandy. So our ground is all sand. So we're a lot smoother. We don't have speed bumps out in the middle of the field. So And my dad loves his motor grader, so he wants all the roads always very smooth. He doesn't want any bumps or washouts. If it rains, he's out there grading or has somebody, had my brother grade for him. So,
wow.
Always keeping the roads smooth.
Okay. Now I
made it.
Your turn.
It's my turn.
I'm excited to see how you'll ride this.
All right. Ready?
Okay, we're ready. All right.
So, yeah, I've been driving things since for as long as I can remember. At the farm, we had four-wheelers, and my dad would actually let us drive old cars around the fields. We were really young, so been driving a long time.
So when did you start NASCAR, and why NASCAR?
Yep, so started, my first NASCAR truck race was in 2011. I was 18 years old, which was the minimum age then.
Wow.
And it was supposed to just be one bucket list thing you did. It was just going to be a...
bucket list thing.
Yeah, but an accomplishment to say we raced the local ranks and made it to NASCAR. And then that was over 500 starts ago. We've been racing since 2011. I've been racing every year.
Wow. Well, thanks for driving.
Yep.
And showing me a little bit of the ropes. I think you did a little better than me.
I don't know. I think you had a better lap time.
Well, too fun. Anything else that you want to add?
That's it. I could just take this and ride the rest of the show now. We could get it out of this test track. I could just ride, not have to walk. That'd be nice.
I mean, you're the professional driver here, so.
Yeah, I don't think they'd let me, though.
So as you think about being here at the Farm Progress Show, you have this cool partnership going with Ross. You've got folks in the field literally driving and testing equipment. What kind of questions or comments are you getting from growers this go around as we think about, hey, we're heading into a little tighter economic time. How does Kubota fit into that partnership alliance for farmers?
I think, honestly, it comes down to the competition has a lot of units that are what you consider play toys. Like, if I've got this Razor or I've got this Ranger that goes, 60 miles an hour and they spend $30,000 to $40,000, that disposable income is kind of drying up. Mm-hmm. Ours is more considered a work vehicle. So a lot of these things are transitioning over to, I've got a really expensive truck. I don't want to take that in the field and beat it up. So I'm going to take a Kubota, which is a work vehicle, and I'm going to take it out on my land and do the work that it's intended to do. So it's almost like a mandatory work vehicle at a ranch or a farm.
And how do you make that distinction of maybe a toy or something a little more fun versus a work vehicle?
I think that we offer like both. You know, we have our Sidekick, which is our fun, where it can do work and it can also be a play where you can go fast. But one thing about the RTV, in particular to our diesel models, are the versatility of them. Like I said, you have the ability to do multiple things, whether you're hauling different items from A to B, or if you need to get something done and add a blade to the front. So it's really like a part of the family. It's almost like the mini Sidekick. And then part of our marketing as well, one of our taglines is built to outwork, power your productivity, capability reimagined, tough and dependable. And that's really the core of what we bring as a Kubota. Some of our customers that may have bought a RTV 15 years ago tell us about how durable it is and how it's able to help them get their job done. So it's a part of, you need your tractor, you need your RTV as well, you need your, construction equipment. So we're kind of almost like the Swiss Army knife that Andrew is that we have multiple purposes on that property, whether you have friends over. One great example is our RTV X1140. It has the ability to have a four-seater where you may want to haul people, but then it converts into a two-seater with a longer bed. So that machine itself, it can get work done around. But when you have family and friends over, then you guys can get from point A to B without having to use, your regular vehicle of choice. So
work harder and play harder. I like it.
That's my motto.
As we continue to expand our product line, we've released the X that we've done last year. But we've also released the RTV X1130, which is the first of its kind to offer a 6-foot cargo bed, which the bed sides do come down as well, and they can come down and become a flatbed. But we've created unique capabilities with that we're starting to see competitors follow all of a sudden. You can separate it out into compartments But you can also use winches in the back of the bed to lift up anything you have that's heavy that you can't do it yourself. So with that extended bed, it really is expanding our capabilities across our lineup.
Well, you're here at the Farm Progress Show. You've interacted with many, many farmers. What are you hearing from them? What are they saying?
I'll say they're excited. Like, everybody that's walked into the booth, this is our first time offering a test track into our booth. So a lot of times you don't really get that opportunity to interact with our diesel machines. One con I will say is that people say that our diesel machines are slow. But when you're around a farmer, you're doing work, do you really need to go 65 miles per hour? But once they get in it and they see the capability, they see the suspension, they see how it is when you go up the ramp, then they're coming back and they're saying, oh, this is a good machine. So I've heard that multiple times from people that did the test drive, or I talked to them about the machine first, and then I say, go see it for yourself and get that hands-on experience. And where you're behind the wheel of our machine, then you can really understand its capabilities. So I think that really enhanced our booth this year.
I've been hearing from cons and pluses. So I've been hearing some of the pluses are when you talk to them and you explain to them that our VHT transmission, it really offers a one-pedal operation. What I mean by that is if you don't have the gas pedal down, it wants to stop. So you don't have to use the brakes. Our brakes are wet sealed, so you never have to change them. So that's pretty impressive by durability standpoint, but the fact that it wants to stop even uphill by itself, it's remarkable. It has ultimate control going downhill. So that's been a really enjoyment to talk to people about that. The only cons I've run across are existing Kubota dealers, or Kubota customers. They said, ours is 10 years old and it's still running. I have no need for a new one. And I'm like, okay, well, that's great. But they'd love to see the new model, but they're not interested in getting a new one.
Yeah. Double-edged sword there on that
it
one.
Is.
Oh, yeah. Well, we certainly appreciate you guys both joining us today. This has been really exciting, and we look forward to continuing to see new partnerships unfold and what Kubota has ahead for them. So thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you
so much.
You know, Michelle got to have some cool experiences at the Farm Progress Show, and a little jealous of not participating in that interview. So I'm glad you guys were able to put that together. Josh Linville's report came out this week, a quick fertilizer update from him with StoneX. This week, India secured nearly 1.2 million tons of urea on their recent purchase tender, and he says that it should provide a bit of a price floor for the urea market until demand returns. He also says the amount is not overly surprising, given the tight price range, the number of tons offered in the market. The market is also keeping a close eye on Hurricane Francine, like we talked at the top of the show. They're going to see how heavy the rains come and what kind of a role that plays in shipping logistics. So a little fertilizer update there.
Well, Tanner, we also saw the September WISD report released this week on Thursday, reflecting some neutral figures for soybeans and pretty bearish numbers for the corn markets. Yield is, of course, the big question mark that a lot of folks were watching on that report. And corn yield came in at a 183.6, which is up half a bushel from the August report. Soybean yields were left untouched at 53.2 for our national yield. Trade expectations were hoping to see actually a reduction of corn yields, with the average guess coming in at a 182.4. Adding to that bearish sentiment in corn came in harvested area and production numbers higher for corn than the trade estimates, and the USDA did not adjust Brazilian corn or bean production numbers. They did, however, make a slight reduction in Argentina's 2023-2024 bean crop. CONAB has yet to touch those numbers as well. Demand has also been fairly lackluster after seeing this week's weekly export sales come in for corn well below trade estimates. Soybeans, however, in at the higher end of trade estimates. With official harvest reports now underway, I think the market's focus will certainly turn to yield reports coming out of the field and just how much production we're going to see here in this crop year.
Yeah, if you talk sentiments at Farm Progress Show and sentiments at Husker, it definitely seems like the yield sentiment in Nebraska is much higher than that of those in Iowa. Mm. But yet everybody expects there to be a strong corn crop.
I think a record crop, if not near record crop this year.
That's right. Listeners, we appreciate all that you do, tuning into our episode every single week and watching us on social media. If you don't know, we have video up on social media and YouTube. Go check that out. But what do you say for today, Delaney? Should we let him go?
Let's let him go.